This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Love on the Rocks, A Positano Tale by Katie Costa. Thank you for joining me from California today, Katie.
Thank you.
How did you get interested in Positano, and where is Positano located?
Well, Positano is in the Amalfi Coast in Italy, and I've done a lot of traveling in Italy, and I had actually never been there. And my best friend and I, we were planning a trip one summer, and she said, oh, you've got to go to Positano. You'll love it. It's amazing. So we went and then continued going there the next three summers.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's how it started.
And for my listeners, you have a background as a teacher, so the summer months would be traditionally time that you could devote to travel.
Yeah, absolutely. The height of tourist season.
But, well,
that's what usually happens. So my best friend was also a teacher, and we would plan trips together and somehow always ended back up in Positano.
You also are an individual, as an author, this is an important skill to have or an important habit to be in. You keep notes. You have a travel diary. How do you remember some of the events that you have included in your tale?
Well, I would. I've always kept a travel journal, even when I was little on family vacations. But I would just, at the end of the day, or whenever I had time, or the next morning, I would just, you know, start writing down the events of the previous day, and that's how I would do it. That doesn't work for everybody, but that's what I would do. There were so many crazy things that were going on that I was like, oh, I got to write this down before I forget it.
It's a wonderful trait. I wish I had that skill. I don't have the discipline to remember what I did in the morning. Sometimes I have to look at my laundry tags to remember who I am. So you've done a great job. The Love on the Rocks, the title, how would you describe your novel?
I would say it is light romance, chick lit. You know, it's geared toward females of all ages. So it's you know, got some romance, got a lot of food, the disco, the beach. I mean, it's really geared towards females, I would say. Not that men can't enjoy it, but I'd say it's more for women.
Katie, how long did it take to decide to write this novel, Love on the Rocks, or follow the dream of becoming an author? How long have you been on that quest?
I always enjoyed writing. I wrote stories when I was young in grammar school, just for fun, plays, things like that. And then when I decided to start writing this novel, it took me probably 3 years. And that's basically due to the fact that I teach. So my writing was kind of kept to the weekends and vacations because it was hard to kind of fit it in. So it took me about 3 years. And then I just kind of put it on the back burner and was working on other projects. And then within the last year, I decided I really wanted to do something with it. I'd had no luck sending it into editors or publishing houses. I'd gotten good feedback from editors back east, but they just weren't ready to take on new projects from unknown authors, so I decided to go the self-publishing route, and that's when I contacted Lulu. So this has all been happening within the last year.
Phenomenal. And as a first-time author, 468 pages is an ambitious project. I mentioned to you earlier.
it was a lot longer, too. I had to
was
cut
it?
A lot out.
I talked to some authors. I did have one author, I think, that had wrote 1,100 or 1,200 pages the first attempt out and had to, you know, reduce it considerably. 468 pages is still a wonderful length for a first-time author. Was the editing anything that was complicated for you? Was it difficult to pare down some of the storyline that you had created?
Originally, one of the publishers that had actually given me feedback upon telling me no, they didn't want my work, was to cut it out. Like, you need to cut it down and get the two characters to Positano a lot faster than you have. So I cut out a considerable chunk of the original work. And that was, you know, that was on my own doing editing. But once I was working with Lulu Publishing, the editing wasn't too bad. It was more like looking into grammatical things. The story was pretty solid, and it flowed, and there wasn't much to patch up. It was really just had to do with, you know, making sure everything was grammatically correct and the syntax was in check and all that.
Well, that would be important as an educator and an author.
Absolutely, and the daughter of an English teacher.
Oops.
So.
Now, yes. the storyline itself, I have authors that approach the creative side of their efforts differently. Some will sit down and just let the story take them or the storyline take them. Others will sit down and probably write an outline, basically flesh out the characters and then develop their storyline. Which of those approaches did you use?
I had a basic framework. I knew the characters very well. They're loosely based on myself and my friends. So I have that in place. The fun part was really getting to play around with reality and what happened and what didn't happen. So I had a basic framework. I combined a lot. I took a lot from, you know, past summers and then the one particular summer. So I had a basic plot that I was working with, and then I added a lot of things that obviously were not true and tweaked things and changed characters. So basically the plot was already really intact. And I worked from that.
You've called this a chick-lit novel. In other words, designed or written specifically desiring to have a female audience. Is there anything about the characters that you have included that is maybe unique or will make them stand out to the reader?
I think, and I've read a lot of novels for women lately, I think, tend to focus, and TV shows for that matter, focus on people in their 20s. And you're kind of seeing like a new surge of things geared towards women in their 30s, maybe. I think I felt that was unique. And it was also a story that's set in Positano. I've read a lot of books about Italy, but I've never come across anything, to my knowledge, I could be wrong, that's been completely set in Positano. So I think that also sets it apart.
Is it contemporary as far as time frame, or does it go back a few years?
It is. It's relatively recent, yes.
Relatively recent in the style and content. Which of the subplots do you think is going to be the most outstanding, and maybe you hope some producer might get a hold of it and decide to develop it into a movie of some type?
Oh, wow. There are so many subplots. I'd say the two main characters have a lot going on. I mean, one is kind of in a befuddling love triangle. She's, you know, kind of running away from a horrible relationship and then is really not looking to find romance and finds herself in the middle of a love triangle. And then the other one is, you know, in love with, or thinks she's in love with, you know, this one guy that doesn't give her the time of day. So it's, you know, that old song and dance of, you know, the one you want you can't have,
right,
kind of a thing. It goes back and forth, and there's just a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of drama and confusing things that happen but are also really funny, and some of it has to do with, you know, it's a different culture and Americans intermingling with Italians and not always understanding what's going on. So that adds kind of to the hilarity, I guess.
Is there an underlying moral that popped out, maybe unintentionally, from the completion of Love on the Rocks?
I think it's about, you know, everybody's got their issues and their problems, and sometimes we think running away to some type of different scenery or time zone is going to fix things. And vacations are great, but you can't always take a vacation from, you know, your real life problems. They're always going to be there. So I think that was part of it. And just like enjoying life and appreciating other cultures and appreciating also what you have is, I think, another underlying theme or moral.
I think that's a wonderful goal. In fact, I've heard that. My dad used to tell me all the time, you can move, you can go someplace else, but you can't get away from yourself.
That's true, yeah.
Katie, you mentioned that you had done some extensive editing on this novel. Is it material that you might include into a sequel as a follow-up to what you've already penned?
You know, it could. People have asked me if I wanted to do a sequel. I've never thought about it. I guess I could, the way I ended the novel. You can go. But I guess with the stuff that I edited out, I could probably do a prequel if I wanted to. I ended up doing a prologue, writing the prologue, which took a little bit from what I had cut out originally to kind of set the story up. So I don't know that I would, I work on a novel set before this trip, but maybe a sequel.
Sure. And any other things in the works at this point?
I am. I started a novel actually about 4 years ago, while I was leaving this one on the back burner for a bit to take a break from it. So I am working on another Whitman's novel on dating in your 30s.
Excellent. I think contemporary subject should be well received. Have you been able to get any feedback from readers that has caused you to be kind of content with what you've accomplished so far?
I actually have. And granted, it's been local, and I'm hoping this really branches out across the country. But locally, I've gotten a lot of feedback from women actually in all different age ranges, which has been really great. Like women in their 20s, 30s, 40s, up to their 70s. They're all taking away different things from this, either, you know, the love of travel or relating to the characters. It's been really good. It makes me feel good that it is a story that people can relate to and enjoy.
Congratulations. The title again is Love on the Rocks, A Positano Tale, author Katie Costa. Thank you for joining me today. My listeners are going to want to get a copy of your book and possibly follow you as a fan. Do you have a website, or how will they get a copy of the book?
The book is available on Lulu.com, Amazon.com, and BarnesandNoble.com right now. And we are working on the blog, so that will be set up relatively shortly, where they can follow me. They can Google my name and look that up.
Super. And Katie is spelled with a C, C-A-T-I-E. Costa,
yes,
C-O-S-T-A. And if they do a search online, they'll not only bump into you, but also your publications, and certainly, hopefully, become a fan of yours. Thank you for joining me today, Katie.
Thank you, Jay.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is Jay Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
The title of the book, Menopause or Lunacy? That is the question. And the author is Donna Faye Randall, and Donna joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. And this interview is brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Donna.
Hello, Steve.
Great to have you with us. This is not theory. You've been through it.
I think I'm still going through it, but every day I hope it's nearing the end.
Well, it is a very serious part of life for ladies, and we'd have to say for men, wouldn't we?
Yes, I like to say it's a topic that is relevant for women and everyone with whom they connect.
And you've added a lot of humor to it. You've tried to lighten it up in spite of the seriousness of it.
That's right. I guess from my background, my family of origin valued humor for all sorts of things, and I think a spoonful of sugar, you know, helps the medicine go down, and I would say a spoonful of humor certainly helps in many of life's trying times.
Helping us get through the day.
Exactly.
So who is your book aimed at?
My book is aimed at women. Ideally, the women would be introduced to the book at the front end of their menopausal journey so that they can understand that their menopausal journey has started, and that's why things are changing. And then they could read the book and would have some idea of how it might go for them based on my experience and how they can, you know, just laugh a little bit more through it and take it easy and not be so panicked, not wondering what the heck is going on.
How did the book come about?
The book came about when the exact experience had to do with a very bad banking error, and it was a situation where I was paying off a Visa bill that had got a little out of hand, and I took out a loan to, you know, help everything turn out right, and I very happily was paying down this debt electronically. And when I would go back and check, you know, a day later, a couple of days later, I still had this debt, and I couldn't figure out what the heck had happened. So I ended up calling my local bank branch, and it was a woman of a certain age, as I call menopausal women, who was the manager and I was dealing with, and she determined that I had paid the telephone company. And we're talking about $5,000 here.
Oh,
so I paid the phone company an error in my, you know, on my internet banking. And, of course, they didn't call me and say, you know, are you planning on using a lot of long distance in the near future or something like that? So I had to go back through the banker, and she got it all straightened out. So when it was finished, we were sort of chuckling about the whole thing, and I said, well, that's what happens with we menopausal women. We get a little confused. And she started chuckling. She says, I hear you, sister. So I said, you know, I got a question for you. If I were to write a book with a humorous tone, short scenarios, so crazy menopausal women don't have to read a lot at one sitting, do you think it would sell? And she said, you better get writing, because you bet it will. So that was exactly the situation where I just went, you know, the light bulb went off. I said, okay, I got to do this. So it started scenario by scenario by scenario. And about 10 years later, it's come to be.
Well, it is a labor of love. That's something that not only you look back on and you can see you could get through it, but your desire to help others, and that's got to be very fulfilling.
Yes, it is. And my younger brother and I often have said of ourselves that we were put on this earth as a warning to others, because we tend to get ourselves into some crazy situations. And so in a humorous way, again, I guess that's what I hope to be doing, you know, so that some of the chaos I've gone through and made it through to the other side and had some panic, had some laughter, but I'm hoping it can help women. And certainly the feedback so far from those of us
those who have read it, and often they get back to me and say, wow, this is exactly what I've been feeling, and I really appreciate that I know that I'm not alone.
How did you pick out the experiences? What was the test that it had to meet for it to be in your book?
That's a good question. Well, I have the book divided into four sections, and they basically deal with the mind chaos, the physical changes, and let me see, you're going to try me on this, sort of all the emotional trauma, and then sort of getting through the other side. And I had, as you can imagine, I'd written many, many more scenarios, and they were all in these little Word documents on my computer. And so I printed them all out and then sorted them. And since the book was written during over such a long period of time, there was certainly some duplication. And so I, you know, sifted through those, and then some of those I melded into one. Some things just got not tossed because they're still in a file in case they're needed for speaking engagements or whatever. And I guess for me it was a test of which elements remained riveting and which I thought would be the most helpful to the readers. So I guess that was my litmus test of what would be in there and what wouldn't be. And then I had five women who had been through that process of menopause, and they helped me further figure out, okay, no, you don't really need this one if you have this one, or combine these two, or all the rest of it. So that was a very helpful process.
You have a poem in it.
I do have a poem in it. Actually, I have two poems in it.
Oh, do you? Daily Thoughts of a Menopausal Maniac, a poem.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not? You want to read a little of that?
Oh, do I want to read?
Yes.
Actually, I have a little issue with my, no, it's a big issue with my vision right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it, okay. And interestingly enough, it's connected with menopause.
Really? How does that happen?
Yes. Huh. It's, if I can get a little bit off topic here, it's many menopausal women suffer from an affliction called dry eye. Now, not only menopausal women suffer from that affliction, but it seems to be part of the hormonal chaos in our bodies, and often near the end of menopause, that's something that happens. And in my situation, it happened with a vengeance. What a surprise. And also along with cataracts that have been growing quite a bit. So at this point, I have lots of trouble reading. And I don't know if it's fair to turn the tables and say, would you like to read some of it?
Well, I could. Let me pull it back up here. I just had it open. There it is. It's, again, the title is Daily Thoughts of a Menopausal Maniac, a poem. Donna writes, oh my, I forlornly cry. Just tell me why I must toil so to get through each day when so often I just want to die. Well, that just sums it up, doesn't it?
It certainly did at the time, yes.
It certainly did at the time. With glee I see in front of me the bliss with which we live each day in perfect harmony. These ups and downs and grins and frowns reveal I'm out of control, but now I see they are a part of me, this truly pathetic soul. Oh, my goodness. And that's kind of way you feel, don't you, when you're going through it, just kind of pathetic.
Pathetic, and as you can see, I think what I liked about how the poem turned out was the back and forth. You know, in one,
yes.
I don't know, nth of a second, it seems that I would feel just terrible, as you could hear there, and then all of a sudden, whee, life's wonderful. So if that in itself is quite crazy making.
So one of your themes that we need to be kind to those who kind of struggle with this.
Yes. I guess I like the thought of being kind to everyone in
sure.
life. But,
sure.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that has happened during the course of women's liberation is that early stages, we felt we needed to be like men in order to enter the professional world as, you know, professional women and so on. And I think that was true. We had to do that. And then we got so used to shrugging off women's stuff because we were out there trying to be something different than perhaps we were feeling we were. And so I guess what I'm really... one of the things I was aiming for in the book was to acknowledge, to embrace our femininity, because really you don't get any more female than you know, the ways our bodies go through these situations and help us have babies and all that kind of stuff, and that we need to value our femaleness and all it embraces. So this is sometimes a really difficult part of that, but by being kind to ourselves and then to all the women around us who we suspect might be into this journey and might not know it, it's really key to support one another, I think always, women to women, and then especially during this time of life.
And it's okay to get help from health practitioners.
It most certainly is. One of the dangers is that as we are going further into menopause and seem to have all these things that are happening to us that we knew and not so happy about, is we can tend to say, oh, well, that's just menopause. I don't have to worry about that. It'll change. It'll get better. And sometimes maybe it isn't, quote, just menopause. There might be some underlying health issues that need some attention over and above the menopausal situation. So it's very important to stay connected with all our health practitioners, no matter who they are and what kind of practice they have. And I would say, too, you can look for others that might help in different ways, but if you've got a tried-and-true doctor or naturopath or whoever that has known you before you enter this phase, then, you know, you can see what's changing, what's different, what's just part of the process of going through menopause and then continuing our aging process.
The absolute bottom line, though, is laugh often and laugh loudly with and not at menopausal women.
Right.
That is the bottom line.
It is. It really helps, you know, the medicine go down. It helps us relate to our sister girlfriends, to share our stories, to know that this too will pass. I so often hear women say, oh, I don't need to read that book. I've been there and done that. And I encourage them to still have a read. You can sit back and have a good laugh. And then you can remember what it was like. And then if you've got women around you, most of us do, who are in that that space of life, then you can sort of very keenly remember and help them with your own stories.
We've been listening to Donna Faye Randall, the author of her book, Menopause or Lunacy? That is the question. Donna, what's the best way to get your book?
The best way to get my book, probably more universally, is balboapress.com or amazon.com.ca. And particularly if you're ordering from Canada, you can go through menopauseorlunacy.com and get a very good shipping rate and get your book very quickly. And in that way, I can also, if you want to also email me, if the book is for someone else or for yourself and you want it, a little, you know, signature and so on there, and I'd be happy to do that as well.
Thank you so much, Donna, for joining us on Indie Book Publishing. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure as well, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Do you ever wonder if you're the only woman who runs errands in her yoga pants so it will look like she went to the gym? Or how about the only mom who feeds her kids raw cookie dough? Or are you the only one who cooks her family cold cereal for dinner? Do you need more laughter and less loudness? More self-love and less self-loathing? More joy and less judgment? You're not alone. Come to the living room. A place where we get comfy, candid, and confident together. Come seeking sanctuary and leave feeling renewed. We're saving a seat for you. Give yourself some living room today.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled The Iguana Project. And our author who joins me from Dallas, Texas, is Dale Arden. Welcome, sir, to the program.
Glad to be here.
This is a novel. You are a writer of, I would say, technical projects, technical material. This particular book is a step into the fictional area. How long did it take for you to write this? What was your background that caused you to want to write this?
Well, it took me about 3 years from start to finish. I have always been an avid reader of Dan Brown and John Grisham and some other writers along those same lines, you know, Lad Patterson. And I always had a desire to write a book, and I'd had an idea for one bouncing around in my head for many years. And my career required that I travel extensively throughout the United States, to North America, through Europe. And I found myself on airplanes on extended flights. And, you know, after a while, you got tired of working all the time, got tired of watching movies. And I thought, why not get started writing that novel that had been bouncing around in my head for years? So I got started and started developing a manuscript, and then I became obsessed with writing a book.
Phenomenal.
Every time I was at an airport, I was writing. In hotel rooms, I was writing, and it got to be a lot of fun.
Now, did you start with an outline? You mentioned you have a lot, and I've flown internationally. There's a lot of time on the planes to do either a lot of thinking or a lot of nothing. And did you start with an outline in writing your book, The Iguana Project?
Yes, I did. I actually did some character development. I did an overall outline of the structure of the book, how I was going to write it. And I actually took some time to buy a book on how to write a novel and read that first. That helped a lot. But, yeah, I did. I tried to do the whole storyline and outline first. That got me off to a pretty good start.
Is this an adventure novel or is it more of a mystery? How would you describe it?
It's more of a mystery.
And when you began to write it, you mentioned Dan Brown and other authors who are well known. Was that the same audience that you were trying to reach with your project?
Yes. It is an adult book, you know, even though I think it's designed for adults, not really designed for young readers.
Because of the intensity of the subject matter or the violence, how would you best describe that?
Well, no, there's some romance chapters in there that are more designed for our adult readers. The rest of the book is fine.
All right. And when you began to flesh out the story, a lot of authors will start with a concept, and as they write, they weave into that storyline maybe an ulterior motive, maybe a message. Was there one that you consciously put into the storyline, or was it just the fun of writing and the fun of the story, the adventure?
No, there definitely was an approach to solve some major problems in the United States and possibly other countries with solving the overall, overcrowding of prisons. Hmm. It also deals with the space program and some scientific research. The basic premise of the Iguana Project was looking at marine iguanas that have some unique characteristics that are going to be applied in NASA for long-term space travel. So those things are intertwined in the book.
You also mentioned something to do with wealth and wealth prosperity. Is that also a theme that goes through your book?
Yes. My main character, Patrick Braydock, is the son of an Irish immigrant and becomes a very wealthy lawyer. And as a result of his early career, he gets mixed up with the mafia. And he finds out later that he's really being manipulated. So he realized he needs to get out of this mess, and he starts secretly hiding documents that divulge all of the bad dealings that's being done by the mafia. So he starts hiding those in his home safe, and the mafia finds out that he's got that, and they come to try and reclaim those documents. And his wife is caught in this burglary and is brutally murdered. Mm. So the premise from this point forward, Patrick Braydock is off to try and revenge the death of his wife. That's the starting that gets us rolling down this path. How does he revenge the death?
Yes. What is that step, or is that something you can reveal in an interview?
Well, as a result of some vacationing in the Galapagos Islands, he learns of some research being done with the marine iguanas there. And once he finds out this secret, the light comes on and he realizes he now has a solution to his problem, and that's the book unwinds and unfolds how he does this. And it gets all entwined with the government and NASA, space travel, etc.
Bunch of side characters that are interwoven into the storyline. Is there a certain, I don't know, created event or something that came to you in your imagination and in your creativity that will stand out to the reader? Is there one particular scene that you think might be even a movie trailer? Maybe a movie producer might pick up on it.
Well, it's the basic story is how Patrick Braydock revenges his wife's murder, and he comes up with some very creative ideas on how he can capture members of the mafia and put them into a state of suspended animation.
Really?
So once that unfolds in the plot, it gets more and more complex. And then later, this scientific achievement gets uncovered by the government. And then things really go upside down and go off on a lot of different tangents.
You have 290 pages. And I presume from our early conversation, there's a lot of action in this novel.
Yes, there is.
Where does it take place? When does it take place?
It takes place in current time, and a lot of the scenes take place in the Galapagos Islands, in upstate New York, in NASA, and in Huntsville, Alabama.
Interesting.
So it's entwined with the space program. It gets entwined with things, the events in Washington, and some of the challenges they have with the finances of the government and the country, and how some of these solutions are brought forward by the solution of Patrick Braydock revenging his wife.
Since my listeners don't really know of Dale Arden, explain to them who you are as far as an author, as far as your motivation, and how you would introduce this storyline to them.
Well, you know, I've been asked that question many times, and, you know, what is your book about? And I try to respond to that very simply by saying it's the story about son of a Irish immigrant who becomes a successful lawyer, whose wife gets brutally murdered, and he comes up with a creative solution to revenge her death. And that sets the stage for the book.
That's encapsulating the storyline. Now, if you were to describe this book or describe it as you have to my listeners, there must be something there that's unique about your book that makes it different from Dan Brown's and other authors in the same genre.
Well, I believe it brings a rather unique, thrilling solution or a different type of plot to the book. It's unlike other books. This it really actually brings forward some potential solutions to some of the government's problems in the United States. Although it's up to the reader to decide whether this is something that is serving the greedy politician's desire to make money, or it's really a true solution for the people of the country. And a little background on myself. You had asked earlier, my career was a consultant, and I traveled throughout the world. And as a result of that, I had to write a lot. I was writing procedures, proposals, job descriptions. So I was writing a lot, but I never had a chance to really write something for fun. So this was my chance to get something written for fun.
It's fabulous. Is there any particular character in history or in current novels by other authors that you would like to take place or take the place of, or share their adventures?
Well, I mentioned Dan Brown, and I find Dan Brown and John Grisham very exciting readers, very exciting writers, and I enjoy reading their work, and I think that's kind of where I'd like to be, is in those, follow those footsteps of those writers.
And any character that we would recognize in history, like, 007, for example, many guys think, boy, it'd be great to be 007, maybe experience that lifestyle for a week or two. Anybody in that category that you also can relate to?
Well, that's interesting that you ask that, because when I was writing my book, I had some challenges keeping my protagonist, my main character, focused in the book, because many of my minor characters really wanted to come to the forefront. Patrick Braddock has twin sons, and they often wanted to be, it seemed like they wanted to flow into the mainstream of the book. So, I was counseled that said, look, you've got to be thinking about this as a James Bond novel. Your protagonist has to be the main character throughout the entire book, which caused me to go through several rewrites to get him in that position.
That was the challenge that you overcame then in order to make this a completed project.
Right. Absolutely right.
Fantastic. There, you mentioned there are some sub-characters that had an interesting maybe profile. Were those characters that you wanted to take forward perhaps in a sequel or another approach to a fictional work?
Yes, actually, I have been thinking about my next novel and where my book ends, which is a very challenging ending, which really launches the next book. And I can't divulge how that ends, but it's a very exciting, challenging end to the book.
My listeners will want to get in touch with you and find their own personal copy of The Iguana Project, almost 300 pages. Dale, where do they get a copy of The Iguana Project?
Well, first I'd like to thank the audience for listening. Listening in, if they're really interested in getting a copy of the book, it's available through my publisher, lulu.com, also through Amazon and Barnes & Noble, both in hardback, softback, and ebook.
And they can also do a search online and maybe in a nice way stalk your writing in the future. Dale Arden, spelled D-A-L-E, last name A-R-D-E-N. They can connect with you through their online resources, get their own book if they choose through a local retailer. If they don't carry it in stock, they can order it. And then look forward to the next edition of something that you are planning and already working on. So thank you again for joining me and sharing your background story.
Hi, thank you.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.